Spiraling real estate prices drove Paul Collins out of San Francisco. So, did he head for the suburbs? Well, not exactly. An aspiring writer, Collins and his wife packed up their books and their baby son, and they set sail for Wales, a little town called Hay-on-Wye. Collins recounts what happened to them in a book called Sixpence House. He still remembers his first impression of his new town.
I couldn't believe it when I saw it. It was this beautiful old village, all full of 200, 300, 400-year-old buildings, cobblestone streets, and everything's a bookstore.
It's true, then. I mean, it's 1,500 people and 40 bookstores or something like that?
Pretty much. Pretty much every building there is either next to, over, or under a bookstore in some form or another, or is a bookstore. It's really the town industry now.
The obvious question, I guess, is how in heaven's name did that happen?
Well, Hay-on-Wye started off as a market town. Hay's been there for about 1,000 years, but its modern founder is a fellow named Richard Booth. And he came along in, I think, 1962. At that point, Hay was very much in decline. It had been this market town where farmers from the surrounding counties in Herefordshire would come in to sell their goods. And by the 60s, with truck transport and supermarkets coming into being, market towns really weren't needed anymore. And so Booth came along, and there was this town full of warehouses, very sort of sturdy old buildings, and they were all going very cheaply. And so first he bought the local firehouse, filled it up with books. Then he bought the local cinema, filled that up with books. Then he bought the castle right in the middle of town, filled that up with books. So you sort of see the pattern emerging here.
Yeah.
And by the 70s, he declared that Hay was going to be the book-selling capital of the world. Of course, a lot of people thought this was a good joke, but he's actually pretty much pulled it off.
Well, I mean, the curious thing about this, and I guess the odd thing is you don't just walk into a little town and declare that it's going to be the world capital of bookselling. I mean, presumably you have to somehow draw people there to buy the books.
Well, the place has developed its own momentum. I mean, first Booth did have to kind of create it. He would go on these buying trips to the U.S. particularly and go to estate sales. During the 60s and 70s, when a lot of colleges and seminaries were going under, he'd come along and he'd buy out their whole libraries and then just put them on shipping containers and send them out to the Welsh countryside so that millions of books poured into Hay. And they're all sitting in these barns and these old cottages. I mean, the weird thing is now a lot of old works of American literature are easier to find out in the Welsh countryside than they are anywhere in the U.S.
Of course, it's an organizational nightmare, too, as I gather you discovered.
Well, Booth's bookstore and a number of the other bookstores that have sprung up around him are fairly chaotic because the books are now pouring in at such a rate that it's impossible to keep up. Booth will more or less hire people on the spot just to deal with kind of this avalanche of books coming in, but it's so hopeless, and he's so really kind of wonderfully contradictory in his instructions to his employees that usually what they end up doing is they establish their own little fiefdoms within the store where you'll have these little corners that are somewhat orderly amidst this warehouse that's just completely chaotic, and there are books all over the floor and up in the rafters. And
well, I love the story. You went into one of the bookstores on this most recent visit and found a room you'd never been in before.
Yeah, I stumbled across this room. I'd been to Booth's many times, and then all of a sudden I found this room. It turned out to be a storage room, but the thing is, at Booth's, the difference between the store proper and the storage rooms is pretty much non-existent, and there are no signs. So I was just rooting around in there, and this fellow came in and kind of looked at me and said, you're in a storage room, and started talking to me. And when I mentioned that I was fond of American literature and old American literature, he basically hired me on the spot. The fellow, of course, was Richard Booth. I didn't realize it at the time, but this is the typical experience of many people in Hay. And a great many of the bookstores in Hay were actually founded by employees of Booth's who work for a year or two at his store. And then when some other place comes up for lease, they buy it and they fill it up with books too.
And this, of course, fits into his master plan just as well as if he had those stores, I suppose.
Pretty much. And the thing is, the more stores there are, the more book tourists come. And that's what they're known as in town, book tourists. The more book tourists come in, and the more of them stay and start their own stores and end up working for Booth. Working for Booth does seem to be kind of the typical entry into this. I wouldn't call it training in antiquarian books so much as a kind of hazing. But if you get through it,
I was going to ask you, what was it like being the latest American expert?
Well, it was quite an education in obscure old books, only a few of which were actually American in origin, because all kinds of stuff would come pouring into that room, including like people's notebooks and things like that that just happened to get thrown into the shipping bins.
Well, this actually should have been just about the perfect place for you, though, wouldn't you say? I mean, you describe yourself as having fallen in love with obscure books at a very young age.
Yeah, well, I think what got me into books was as a kid, my parents weren't particularly interested in old books or anything like that. However, they liked to go to estate auctions to buy, you know, old sofas and things like that, chandeliers. And so a lot of times at an estate auction, they're just trying to get the stuff cleared out of the house. And so it's all in a lot. And typically they'll throw books in as well. And my parents didn't want the books, so they would just give them to me. And my parents were particularly partial to any estate auctions of doctors, because they figured the doctors had the good furniture. So as a kid, I had lots and lots of old medical textbooks and reference books from the early to mid-1900s.
You know, for a lot of kids, this would not have been a joy.
Well, the thing is, when you're 8 or 9 years old, you read pretty omnivorously. So, you know, I'd be reading, you know, Star Trek novelizations and, you know, the things I'd buy from Scholastic books. And then I'd read, you know, a book on tuberculosis from the turn of the century. You know, when you're that age, you just sort of read whatever's in front of you.
Yeah.
So as a result, it got me really used to the idea of old books and even to the look and the feel and the smell of old books. That, you know, they're all very distinct physical properties that they have.
What appeals to me about your story is that you found it appealing to discover books that probably weren't even successful in their day.
I like discovering things and sort of discovering with a capital D, where it's an author I've never even heard of. I mean, the great thing about Hay is that it's full of books that you've never heard of. And I mean, to anyone visiting Hay, the worst thing you could do is go there to try to find a specific book, because you'll go insane. The town is so disorganized that you'll never find it. But you go there to find the books that you've never heard of, that you wouldn't have even known to look for in the first place. They find you.
So part of what appeals to you about books is the larger story that goes along with the book that you found. It gives you some hint about the person who wrote it and the people who read it.
It gives you an insight into the era. You know, I think the way that past literature tends to come to us tends to be in a, kind of a greatest hits mode. You know, you only hear of a select few books or plays or things like that, and you lose the context of the wider culture of the time. I actively search out and will read old newspapers and old magazines for the same reason, that's what people back then were reading. And if you want to know how they were viewing the world, that's what you go back and you read. Also because I think journalism, you know, is described as the first draft of history, but for a lot of people and events, it's the only draft. So if you want to find out about those things, you have to go back to the old sources.
Well, there was another episode in your book that goes right to that. I think you found a Popular Science magazine.
Yeah, Popular Science Monthly. Popular Science, I think a lot of people don't realize, is actually quite an old publication. And when it started off, it wasn't mostly focused on gadgets and spacecraft the way it tends to be now. They had a great deal of reporting on the latest developments in chemistry and biology, and it was a very sort of sober publication, but I found in this one issue a very strange piece. This was actually in a room at Richard Booth's bookstore, where they have magazines just lying around in piles and laying on the floors, too, and you just pick up one, and it'll be like a July 1880 issue of The Atlantic or something. Yeah, this is from the December 1878 issue of Popular Science.
December 1878.
Right. Professor Fisher, who was lately found dead in the laboratory of the Prague Gymnasium, was the victim of a theory. Having mixed ammonia with cyanide of potassium, he bade his attendant to note how, quote, science has advanced so far as to be able to render harmless even so dangerous an agent as cyanide of potassium. With this, he tasted the mixture, was quickly seized with violent pains, and expired before a physician could arrive.
I'm sorry, it's not funny.
Wasn't funny for him, but it's a pretty bad laboratory procedure, I'd say.
Yeah, but printed in Popular Science, I suppose, has a cautionary tale.
Yeah, actually, they have quite a few lab accidents turning up in those early issues. It's a dangerous time to be a scientist, I think.
Paul Collins tells the story of his bookstore, Ian Hay on Why, in a book called Sixpence House.